taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves. Those words from William Pitt the Younger are just as true today as they were when he said them back in the House of Commons in 1783. See, today we are racked not only by a litany of necessities, but demands from the oligarchs that we repeatedly elect, all of which seem to require that we give up our rights in one form or another. The more we give government the power to take care of us, well, the more we become slaves on their plantations. If necessity is the plea to take away our rights, what is the call that will restore our desire to protect them? Hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel, and you've joined us here at the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And today, that's the question I'm asking. What is the call that will restore the desire, the fire in the heart of the American people to protect their rights from the tyrants that use these necessities to take them away? There's a saying in many training communities, the body will not go where the mind has not already been. Another one you may have heard is the five P's. Proper preparation prevents poor performance. The idea is simple. If you do not prepare beforehand for a given situation, you'll not be prepared when it happens. But what happens when government preparations move from proper to totalitarian? Have you heard of presidential emergency action documents, or PEDs? More likely, you've heard of a president's emergency powers. These documents are plans created by various presidential administrations to prepare for various emergencies. Taking the form of executive orders, proclamations, and messages to Congress, the idea is that these PEDs can be put into effect on a moment's notice. As with so many things in government, PEDs started as a good idea that is morphed into a sort of Damocles hanging over the rights so many of us cherish. The Eisenhower administration had its own sort of Damocles hanging over its head. Nuclear war. As part of the plans for the continuation of government in the event of a nuclear attack, President Eisenhower created the first of what became known as Presidential Emergency Action Documents. PEDs are classified as secret, and therefore the details are kept secret, not only from the public, but in many cases from Congress as well. However, these documents are periodically reviewed, and several declassified notes from these reviews will give us a hint at what's inside. Research by the Brennan Center for Justice into previous PEDs gives us a glimpse into what presidents believe their emergency powers include. For example, authorized detention of alien enemies or other dangerous persons within the United States. Suspending the writ of habeas corpus by presidential order. Provide for various forms of martial law. The ability to issue a general warrant permitting the search and seizure of persons and property. Establishing military areas such as those created during World War II. Suspending production of the Federal Register, declaring a state of war, and authorizing censorship of news reports. So let's take a look at some of these assumed powers and where they came from. Now, for those of you who believe that the Republican Party's goal is to protect your rights and liberty, I present the case of President George W. Bush. See, in 2004, 2006, and 2008, in light of the 9/11 attacks, the George W. Bush administration initiated a holistic review of the current PEDs. In response to a Freedom of Information Act, the George W. Bush Presidential Library turned over to the Brennan Center for Justice over 500 pages of information generated during the reviews. Now, while the actual PEDs remain classified, the information gathered sheds a light on the disturbing powers a president may claim to have in an emergency. Reading from Title 47 of the United States Code, Section 606D, upon proclamation by the president that there exists a state or threat of war involving the United States, the president, if he deems it necessary in the interest of the national security and defense, may, during a period ending not later than 6 months after the termination of such state or threat of war and not later than such earlier dates as the Congress, by concurrent resolution, may designate,
1. Suspend or amend the rules and regulations applicable to any or all facilities or stations for wire communication within the jurisdiction of the United States as prescribed by the Commission. 2. Cause a closing of any facility or station for wire communication and the removal thereof of its apparatus and equipment. Or 3. Authorize the use or control of any such facility or station and its apparatus and equipment by any department of the government under such regulations as he may prescribe upon just compensation to the owners. Under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the Constitution of the United States, Congress is authorized to declare war, not the president. Yet here we see Congress once again delegating its power to the executive branch. Not only has Congress claimed the power to delegate its authority to another branch, but it claims the power to authorize that branch to violate the Constitution of the United States. The suspension of rules and regulations is one thing, but the closing or takeover of a private facility is a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, should the president unilaterally proclaim that we are at war, merely that there's a threat of war, your access to information can be shut down or controlled by government. This law was enacted in 1942, which is why it specifically references facilities or stations for wire communication. But would a president today extend such an understanding to include the internet? I mean, after all, at some point, all internet communications passes through a wire, either copper or fiber optic. Notes from the review of these documents during the George W. Bush administration shows that they believe this act grants very broad powers in such an emergency. Now, for those of us who make a living by communicating via these facilities, our businesses would be suddenly controlled by Uncle Sam, extending the theft of both liberty and property even farther. Just imagine the dystopian future where an administration already sending examples of misinformation to social media companies have the power to directly control them. Shortly after the Supreme Court opinion in Bordemain versus Bush that recognized the rights of prisoners in Guantanamo Bay to have their detention reviewed by a court, an internal memo from the Bush administration showed that one of the PEDs was being reviewed in light of a recent opinion. Now, while not positive proof, it does certainly imply that the administration had plans to suspend habeas corpus, a power the Constitution leaves in the hands of Congress since it exists in Article 1, where Congress is created. According to Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 of the Constitution, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. The privilege of habeas corpus can only be suspended in cases of rebellion or invasion, not in a national emergency. Did you know there is a law that allows the federal government to restrict travel to certain countries? Title 22, Section 211A reads, "Unless authorized by law, a passport may not be designated as restricted for travel to or for use in any country other than a country with which the United States is at war, where armed hostilities are in progress, or where there is imminent danger to the public health or physical safety of United States travelers." Notes from the George W. Bush Presidential Library shows not only that they were aware of the law, but they highlighted it during their PEDS review. Doesn't it make you wonder under what circumstances a president would be prepared to restrict travel? And would it be limited to foreign travel? Or would a president claim the power to restrict interstate travel as well? Now, some of you may be thinking, okay, these are serious, but they're only for national emergencies. We're okay at the moment. Wrong. America has been in a persistent state of national emergency since 2001. Proclamation 7463, published September 14, 2001, reads, "A national emergency exists by reason of the terrorist attacks at the World Trade Center, New York, New York, and the Pentagon, and the continuing and immediate threat of further attacks on the United States. Now, therefore, I, George W. Bush, President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me as President by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, I hereby declare that the national emergency has existed since September 11, 2001, and, pursuant to the National Emergencies Act, I intend to utilize the following statutes." Now, this proclamation has never been rescinded, so we are still in the state of national emergency that started with the 9/11 attacks. A very funny thing happened on the way to this state of national emergency. You see, President George W. Bush proclaimed that, by virtue of the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and laws of the United States, I hereby declare that the national emergency has existed since September 11, 2001. Yet nothing in the Constitution delegates to the United States, much less the president, the power to declare a national emergency. Since that power is not delegated to the United States, and neither is it prohibited to the states, then that particular power remains with the states. Now, whether or not it should be a state power can and should be discussed. But before such sweeping power is simply handed over to Washington, D.C., we the people, through our states, ought to put some restrictions and limitations on that power, shouldn't we? So when does a president become a king? Well, according to Noah Webster's 1828 dictionary, a president is an officer appointed or elected to govern a province or territory or to administer the government of a nation. Now, the difference between a president and a king is more than just an election. After all, there is such a thing as an elected king. The role of president is to administer the government. In the United States, the president's power to govern is supposed to be limited by the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Compare that to a king as defined by Webster's 1828 dictionary. The chief or sovereign of a nation, a man invested with supreme authority over a nation, tribe, or country, a monarch. Kings are absolute monarchs when they possess the powers of government without control, or the entire sovereignty over a nation. So when the office of president becomes more than the administration of government, when the office is invested with supreme authority, that office ceases to be a president and instead becomes a king. And when the office of president assumes absolute control over the government, creating laws and administrative courts, the president becomes an absolute monarch. Now, when the president, with the stroke of a pen, can overrule the Constitution and laws of the United States, he morphs from an absolute monarch into a despotic dictator. America stands on the precipice. Multiple presidential administrations have set in place rules and orders to effectively take over and rule this country. They did this behind closed doors, not even letting Congress know what their plans are. All it would take is the right person and the right conditions for someone in the office of president to declare a national emergency and activate these despotic powers. George Washington warned us, "The disorders and miseries which result gradually incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual. And sooner or later, the chief of some prevailing faction, more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns this disposition to the purposes of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty." They say, never let a crisis go to waste. Well, unless the American people wake up and regain control of their government, all it will take for freedom and liberty in America to disappear is the right crisis to present itself. Now, this may explain why, in recent history, America has gone from crisis to crisis to crisis. There's always some group of people, some politicians, some pundits that are pushing one crisis or another. I believe there are two reasons for this. One is people who are scared are easier to manipulate. And two, by keeping the crisis going, you have a continuing state of national emergency that supposedly authorizes our president to become our king. Now, this is not simply done with COVID or with terrorism, but it's been done with everything. How many of you remember when Obama told us that the public health care was a crisis and we had to do something? It was a necessity that we pass this illegal, unconstitutional, immoral, irrational set of laws called the Affordable Care Act. How we turned the government into our doctor. I mean, just think about it. During the entire COVID scare, the scaredemic, the scam that was COVID-19. What did we see? We see the governments telling the American people how to live their lives. We saw the FDA push through new radical experimental, quote-unquote, vaccines using experimental technologies. And any question, any contradiction was met with, you're trying to kill people. Or how about the Food and Drug Administration suppressing the
the use of ivermectin as a treatment, even though there was evidence of its effectiveness. We turn over our power because we're scared. The same way the Cold War and the threat of nuclear annihilation meant the American people sat back while the president simply assumed for himself powers. Powers not delegated to the president, powers not even delegated to the United States. All this has led to an ever-eroding freedom for the American people and an ever more tyrannical government, especially out of Washington, D.C. And the turning over that power, the tyranny of our governments has real-world consequences. Consequences that I believe will be very long-lasting. But I have to take a break, so I'll pick it up after that break. Before I go, though, I do want to remind you, please take a look at Healthy Cell. They are a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for health at the cellular level. You know, most vitamins haven't been updated since the 1930s, but Healthy Cell has reinvented the vitamin. They have formulas to do all sorts of different things. Well, for example, my wife has always had a problem sleeping, and when I travel, I have a problem sleeping. So we use Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. It's a travel-ready gel pack that is designed to help you fall asleep and stay asleep using simple supplements designed to support all four stages of sleep. So go to HealthyCell.com, try REM Sleep or any of their products, and if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, they will give you 20% off your first order. So you can try any of their products, put together that first order, just use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets Healthy Cell know that you listen to America Out Loud, and as a thank you, well, they'll give you 20% off your first order. Whether you need help sleeping, staying healthy, or just focusing on the world, Healthy Cell is the place to start.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're talking about how necessity has turned to tyranny. Now, before the break, I was talking about the COVID-19 and the scares and the claims from governments of the necessity of things like lockdowns and mandates and passports and whatnot. Well, there's some new research coming out of an online health journal based in London called BMJ Global Health. Now, they looked at several countries and the impact that many of their quote-unquote COVID policies had. Well, for example, they noted that several countries implemented vaccine mandates and passports to manage the pandemic. Now, what's interesting is some did them through the democratic process, while others imposed them via emergency declarations. Now, they noted that vaccine passports risk enshrining discrimination, turning it into law based on perceived health status. They note that in several places, having set these population-wide passport precedents, it is conceivable that they could be expanded in the near future to include other personal health data, including genetic tests and mental health records, which would create additional rights violations and discrimination based on biological status for employers, law enforcement, insurance companies, government, and tech companies. Furthermore, they pointed out that the research pointed out that the vaccine policies have triggered an intense political debate. It blamed center and left politicians for using anti-vaccination fervor, to promote their own agenda. For example, in the United States, pro-vaccine advocates have equated those who protested the vaccine mandates with domestic terrorists. They actually asking the government and social media groups to strengthen censorship laws, all because of the necessity of taking an experimental drug. These are just some of the impacts of these necessary policies we were told we have to do this. This is necessary to infringe on your rights. And as if on cue, as we, COVID is finally coming out of the news because people realize that it's basically a cold at this point, we have the scare of monkeypox. And as soon as there's a case of monkeypox, we're spending millions of dollars on vaccines. And don't forget, we still have this whole baby formula crisis, a baby formula crisis created in large part based on government policies, both restricting the import of outside baby formula and shutting down a plant that I believe contributes to 40% of our domestic production of baby formula, not because of a problem found in the formula, but because of a couple sick people in the plant. The discovery, not in the formula. There was never found a problem with the formula, but they found something else in the plant. They shut that plant down. It's been down for months. And now what happens? Well, an inspector general is going to investigate the baby formula, quote unquote, debacle. Oh, so the same government that created this mess, the inspector general for the Department of Health and Human Services, is going to investigate exactly what happened. Now, on one hand, I look and say, let's have an investigation. I don't know that an inspector general for the Department of HHS is the best place because, let's face it, inspectors general don't exactly have the best track record in the federal government for actually rooting out problems. But again, we see the government said it is necessary for us to regulate the production of baby formula, and when their policies cause a problem, well, we'll just have an investigation to figure out who else we can blame. Does that sound like freedom? Does that sound like another preparation for tyranny? All because some politicians and bureaucrats said it was necessary for the government to regulate just another part of your life. Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. We have to infringe on your rights because, it's necessary. Well, how about this? There's been a tremendous push lately for this quote-unquote transgender idea. One of the things we're finding out more, remember the necessity of having your children taught by government? Sure, you could teach them yourself or send them to private school if you really, really wanted, but it's a necessity that government be in control of the education, that we have the government-run education, that government oversee whatever curriculum is used in these private schools, and that the government approve of whatever curriculum you use at home. And then we see more and more reports of teachers across the country revealing the strategies they use to teach your children about gender ideology. Not with your permission, behind your back. In fact, according to an article in the Washington Post, the teachers actually discuss various ways they are injecting gender-related discussions into their lessons. They talk about including comments on the use of hormones to stop menstrual periods, and declining to state that sexual anatomy is gender specific. They're teaching your children. But we're told, well, it's necessary that they be taught sexuality in school. We were taught, we had to teach them because, well, sex could be, you know, they could actually have sex and unprotected sex. And now it's turned into, no, we're going to indoctrinate your children with this nonsense that sex is somehow anything other than the two sexes, except in extremely rare situations. But you see, it's necessary that government control the education so that those in charge of the education can indoctrinate your children into what they want them to believe. So when you have somebody like a Leah Thomas, who is a dude, right? I don't care what he says. He's a guy. He's a guy. He has all the male characteristics in biology. He has a Y chromosome. He's got the strength, the lung capacity, the heart capacity of a male. And he's used that to deprive women of a fair chance at scholarships and competitions and wins and championships. And according to a recent interview on Good Morning America, well, he's happy with that. I'm sure he is. He's winning by cheating left, right, and center. But we're told it's necessary to allow him to cheat, to allow him to deprive women of a chance at a win, at a scholarship, because this dude either wasn't taught or can't comprehend that if you've got male genitalia, you're a dude. You've got an XY chromosome. You have certain biological, physical advantages. We created a set of women's sports in so many spaces so that we could provide them a fair shot. Whatever happened to my fair share? What happened to fair? How fair is it to take a woman who has worked probably for years, trained hard to compete at a certain level, to have a chance at a scholarship, a championship, an Olympic opportunity, to have that snatched away at the last minute by some dude who couldn't cut it in the male swimming, but he can beat the pants off the women? But we're told we have to accept that because it's a necessity. No, you don't. I'm sorry. Transgenderism is a mental disorder, not a physical one. And for everyone says, well, gee, Paul, that's not loving. You know what? Lying to people to make them feel better is not loving. Telling somebody it's okay to damage their body, to take the natural processes and potentially lifelong prevent your ability to procreate, to destroy your fertility, to possibly damage your sexual function for the rest of your life because you're confused, is not loving. To cut off perfectly functional parts of your body is not loving. Loving is sitting down going, okay, you're confused. Let me help you understand reality. Let me help you cope with what is true. That's loving. But no, we're told that the not only that we have to allow people to do this, and hey, if you're an adult and you want to do this, that's your choice. I can't stop you. I have no legal. But now we're told if we don't actually endorse this, if we don't actually promote it towards children, that we're the evil ones, when it's actually the tyrants saying it is necessary for you to affirm our insanity that are the evil ones. I read a story about a woman who was raped in a hospital by a transgender man. Now, the hospital denied it, insisting that the rape could not have happened because there was no male in the hospital. Now, I get confused sometimes, but if a person sexually assaults somebody else, isn't that rape? The fact that it was a lady pretending to be a man that did it, does that mean it can't happen? That's the insanity that comes from the tyranny of saying, well, you know, we can call you a man, but you're not really male. And if you attack someone, you get off scot-free because, well, you're not really a man. So you see the insanity? This is what comes from the necessity of following other people's delusion. The harm is not academic. It's not simply that we have women that don't have a chance at winning championships because they're competing against men just because they claim to be a woman. Or they, you know, you have women. Okay, this is a woman in a hospital. What about your wife, your daughter, in a sports, in a locker room, at a gym, at school, a changing room? This is what happens when the insanity of necessity means they will tell you what you can think. And if you challenge that, well, then you must be disposed of. You must be dealt with. You must be shunned. And since we have handed over so much of this power to government, remember when President Obama threatened to withhold funds to states because South Carolina, because they passed a law that didn't allow men in women's rooms? Or how about the Biden administration that wants to cut off school lunch money to schools that don't allow boys in the girls' bathroom? This is the tyranny of necessity. This is where it leads. This is the argument of tyrants. We must do this because I say so. But how many of us are following it as a creed of slaves? You know, this year I'm doing what I'm calling my Blessings of Liberty Tour. And by the way, you can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/tour. But one of the center points of this talk, of this tour I'm doing, is to recognize the inversion of power that has happened in this country. That government believes they, by necessity, must rule over you. But you see, that's not how our country was created. The Declaration of Independence says governments are instituted to protect our rights, that the only just powers they have come from our consent. The preamble to the Constitution says we, the people, ordained and established the Constitution that created the federal government. That defines the limits of its power. If a power is not delegated to the United States, they are not allowed to exercise it. That's the 10th Amendment. But they've come with, well, it's necessary that we do this. And they kind of bypass the entire legal system. We're just going to make it up as we go on because we deem it necessary. And for too many years, the American people, as slaves, have simply followed that creed. But we don't have to anymore. It takes a little bit of education. It takes a little bit of chutzpah. It takes a spine. But we can change this. Now, if you want to find out more, again, go to constitutionstudy.com/tour. You can find out more about the tour. You can find my dates and locations. More importantly, I'm still looking for venues. So if there's a group of you, it doesn't have to be a big group. It could be a small group. You could be a group that gets together, you know, to read and study or just to have coffee in the morning. Or maybe there's an event in your area that you think they would like to hear me. Go to that website, go to constitutionstudy.com/tour, fill out the form, and I'll talk to you about it. We'll see if we can make it happen. I'd love to come visit more and more of America and help them understand that just because the government says it is necessary to infringe on our rights doesn't mean it actually is. You see, one of the most obnoxious, evil quote calls for necessity to infringe on your rights actually comes from the courts. Now, if you're like me, if you follow certain court cases, you'll often notice a couple of things. One is they almost never quote the Constitution of the United States. You almost always quote other cases. That's because the Constitution isn't taught in law schools anymore, at least not anyone I've heard of. But it's even worse. See, this idea of judicial review and levels of scrutiny, you've probably heard them, right? Strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, rational basis. When you're listening to reports or reading reports about court opinions and you hear those words, those phrases, scrutiny or rational basis, understand that's a court saying how hard the government has to work to infringe on your rights, to overturn the Constitution of the United States. The court says, oh, well, you see, this is strict scrutiny. If it's protected by the Constitution, we have to have a really good reason and the least restrictive reason to infringe on a right the Constitution says we cannot do it. That's part of the education that is coming with the Blessings of Liberty Tour. So again, please join me if you can and invite me to come speak to you. I've got several people. I'm still in the works with them. But I thoroughly enjoy coming out and meeting people, and I'd love to come meet you and your group wherever in the country you are. If we can make it happen, we'll do all we can to make it happen. Now, the other thing you can do is you can share this show. Let other people know they too can listen 4 p.m. Eastern Time every weekday on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can listen on our media player or on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find all the links at AmericaOutloud.com. You can also listen on your favorite podcast app, whether it be Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, Podcast, anywhere. And do me a favor, leave me a subscription, leave me a rating and review so that other people can find the Constitution Study as well.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. Again, you've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're talking about how necessity is turned into tyranny. Now, we've talked about so much. We talked about the presidential emergency action documents. We've talked about COVID and the FDA and even looking at things like the promotion of the transgender agenda and others, where we're told by government it is necessary for us to impose this on you. Well, one of the other areas where the government has said it is necessary that we impose things on you has to do with elections. Now, contrary to popular opinion, America is not a democracy. We are a republic, which means we elect people to represent us, to act as our employees, to exercise our power in our name. Now, for that to work, well, our elections must be free, fair, and transparent, right? They must be, everybody who is allowed to vote must be able, who's legally allowed to vote must be able to vote. It must have systems to prevent illegal voting. And that action must be transparent so we can find problems and deal with them. But what's happened is, over the years, more and more people have said it is necessary for the federal government to oversee elections. I've got a little bit of information for you. You realize there is only one national election in the entire country? And no, it is not for president of the United States. Well, yes, it is, but it's not the one you're thinking of. You see, in December, when the presidential electors vote for president, that is the only national election that happens. They vote in their states, they send them to Congress where they're counted. Every other election is a state election. Yes, even your U.S. House and U.S. Senate, those elections are state elections. Yes, when you vote, when you vote quote unquote for president, you don't actually vote for president. You vote for state electors for president. The people that are going to vote later in the national election. And there's a very good reason for this. Well, it's actually two. One is, we are not, you know, the states are not vassals of Washington, D.C. They are their creators. It is the states that created the federal government when they ratified the Constitution. It is the states that are the only entities legally allowed to modify the Constitution. The courts can't, the Congress can't, not even the president, only the states. That's why the elections are controlled by the states. Now, in the Constitution, Congress has the ability to modify or set regulations, but only for elections for U.S. House and Senate, not for presidential electors and not for any state offices. But more and more, what have we seen? We've seen the Federal Election Commission taking control of this. We've centralized it. Well, after that, what have we seen recently? We saw Mark Zuckerberg spend hundreds of millions of dollars to manipulate the president, the elections. You see, a new report by William Doyle and Alex Oliver. Now, they've looked at where Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla Chan spent their money, and you know what they found? They did so on a highly partisan basis that favored, guess who? The Democrats. See, we've been told that it is necessary that the government control this, that the federal government control this, but then we see somebody manipulating the process. Now, granted, it was interesting what they did, because what they did is they gave money to primarily to Democratic leading election boards to quote unquote help the election process. So according to the study, of the 50 largest grants that were given based on per capita spending, they went to the partisan leading areas that favored Joe Biden over Trump by an average of 33 points. So you look at the top 50 places where they spent money, they were all highly Democratic leading. And oh, by the way, of the 25 of the top 50 grants went to just five states: Georgia, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Texas. I'm sorry, yeah, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida, and Texas. Now, okay, Florida and Texas are not known as Democratic bastions. But there was a hope for Democrats were optimistic about Biden's chances in both of those states. And of the Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, they're also states where he had other issues with the election. And in fact, a lot of these grants that were given out were used to set up absentee ballots and drop boxes. Why is that important? Well, according to a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, Hans von Spakovsky, the vast majority of election fraud happens with absentee ballots and at drop boxes. See, as I've said before, absentee ballots are the only kind of ballots that are handled outside of the supervision of election officials, outside of poll watchers, and where the ballot spends a significant amount of time outside of control of either the voter or the election official. And if you want to know about drop boxes, well, have you heard about the movie 2000 Mules? Now, I'm not getting paid for this, but if you haven't, please watch it. Please research it. It is amazing the evidence of criminal fraud in numerous swing state elections. See, the number 2,000, the entitled 2,000 Mules comes from, apparently they found 2,000 people that they identified as ballot mules. Now, in order to be considered a ballot mule, they purchased publicly available cell phone tracking data. And they identified people that had certain characteristics. One, they would visit a voter advocacy group and then immediately head towards drop boxes. They visited at least 10 drop boxes, and they actually stayed at the drop box long enough to do something. In other words, they didn't just drive by a drop box. They spent some time at a drop box. They also used that to find video evidence of people depositing tens and hundreds of ballots. And again, they didn't go to one drop box. They went to at least 10. Boom, 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 boom. But you see, we're told, oh, no, we don't have to pay attention. It's not necessary. What you're trying to do is necessary that we make it easier to vote. And you're trying to suppress the vote. You're racist. We're being told it's necessary to ignore this stuff. These problems are a necessary part of the election. Nothing to see here. Nothing to worry about. Crime and fraud. Again, much of the video evidence includes the people photographing the ballot as they drop it in the drop box. Now, why would you photograph a ballot? I didn't say they took a selfie. See, it's one thing to take a selfie, say, hey, look at me, I'm voting. No, they were photographing the ballot as it went into the drop box. All the different ballots. In other words, they weren't recording their own vote. They were recording all the other votes they were depositing. Now, maybe there's a perfectly reasonable explanation for this, but the only one that seems to come to mind is proof of voting to get paid. Right? Because if someone's going to pay you to deposit ballots, they're going to have proof that you actually deposited the ballot, aren't they? See, we're told it's necessary to not control the election. It is necessary to allow more absentee ballots, more drop boxes, more opportunities for it. It is necessary because, well, they say because someone may not be able to vote. Doesn't it seem like it's more necessary so that more people can cheat? I mean, they say it's bigoted to actually require a photo ID to vote. Of course, they don't say it's bigoted to require a photo ID to buy certain medications. No, it's necessary that we make more opportunity for fraud. Tell me that doesn't lead to tyranny. How does that not destroy the public confidence? How does that not infringe on our human freedom? See, if our votes aren't free, fair, and transparent, then your vote is diluted. Your right to vote, if your right to vote is nullified by someone's illegal activity. Oh, but you see, it's necessary. We need to infringe on that human freedom to have your vote and to have your vote counted properly and to minimize the opportunity for it to be stolen by fraud, because we're tyrants and we want to be in control. And millions of Americans say it's necessary as a creed of their slavery. While we're talking about elections, I found this other one that was kind of interesting. You see, the state bar of Texas is asking a court to punish Attorney General Ken Paxton because he dared to file a lawsuit questioning the election in other states, saying that the elections in four other states were unconstitutional. Now, I reviewed this when it happened. You can find it on the website, constitutionstudy.com. In my opinion, Ken Paxton screwed that case up royally. He had a very simple, he had a golden BB, he had a perfect case. He said, listen, the Constitution says that the electors are appointed in a manner determined by the state legislatures. There are at least four other states that appointed electors in a manner other than prescribed by their state legislature, either by the executive branch or the judicial branch. As a party to the compact that is the Constitution of the United States, Texas has standing to challenge the appointment of those electors because it violates the compact. Now, what he did, I believe, which was foolish, was he buried that in claims about fraud, claims about election abuse. I'm not saying they weren't valid. They didn't make a point there. Texas, it is not Texas's job to oversee the elections in other states. But he had one simple thing. We are a part of the compact. These states are violating the compact. Therefore, we want the court's opinion. Do we count those electors if they were not appointed according to the Constitution of the United States? But now the state bar wants him punished. Why? Because they say he committed misconduct when he filed the lawsuit and asked the Supreme Court to declare the elections unconstitutional. Now, again, he was, you know, I think he made a mess of the case, but Texas is a party to the compact that is the Constitution. If other states are violating the Constitution, in other words, they appointed electors in a manner other than prescribed by the state legislature, who else is going to stand up for that? See, we're told that in order to practice law in the state of Texas, you have to be a member of a private organization known as the State Bar of Texas. We're told that unless you pass their sniff test, well, you're not good enough to practice law. Yet guess what? Here I am. I'm not a college graduate. I never went to law school. I've never practiced law. But I point out not only the illegal actions of the other states, the mistakes that Ken Paxton made in his case, the point that the state bar is upset because, well, lawyers apparently want to maintain the fiction that a judge's word is law. And if a judge tells a state to do something, even if it's in violation of the Constitution, that better be left in place. That's why I brought this up here. This is the state bar trying to say it's necessary for the fiction for the judges to overrule the Constitution of the United States. And any member of the bar that challenges that, they, or at least a well-known one, they want punished. You know what? I push not only Texas, but all 50 states to drop the bar requirement for practicing law. Why should you get the approval of a private organization in order to exercise your skills in any state? And you know what the sad part is? I'm only about halfway through my stack. I've got more. Maybe I'll do more tomorrow. I don't know if I'll do a part two, but maybe I'll do more of this tomorrow because these are all examples of the necessity that being told there's a necessity that we turn over power to government, and for some reason, government decides to act like a tyrant. All the way from the necessity of being prepared for a disaster, whether it be man-made or natural. It's necessary that we do this, but that includes the necessity to simply wipe away the Constitution if we think it's important enough. Courts do it all the time. Think of all the things that we're told are necessary. It is necessary that you let the government determine for you what drugs are safe and when and how you can use them. That it's necessary that children be indoctrinated with certain ideas. It's necessary that we comply with the mental disorders of others. It's necessary that we open our elections up for more fraud. It is necessary. And here's the sad part. Remember, the quote from William Pitt the Younger. Necessity is a plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. And I've talked about the argument of tyrants. Let me give you an example of the creed of slaves. I was speaking to a group of college students several months ago. and we were talking about rights and infringement. And at the end, one young man said, "Paul, you even talk about rights and infringement, but if it's the right thing to do, what's the big deal?" See, he had been told it is necessary to infringe on his rights and the rights of his friends and his neighbors and his family. He'd been told it was necessary. And as a good slave, he simply followed that creed. We are told it was necessary. Why should we fight it? Sadly, there are way too many Americans for whom that is their creed. We've been told it was necessary, so we will comply. Thomas Jefferson said, "A little revolution every so often is a good thing." I'm not looking for battles on the field. No, no, no. I want a revolution in our mind. To understand that just because someone says it is necessary doesn't mean we should comply, doesn't mean it's illegal, it doesn't mean we should let it happen. That maybe the true breath of freedom is the man and woman who stands up and says, "I don't care if you think it's necessary. I am a free person, and I will live my life that way." Now, if you'd like more information on how to do that, well, please make America Out Loud your daily stop for all the news and happenings. Take the articles, the videos, the podcasts, the stories, share them with friends and family and on social media. We need to work together so that we can all work not only to secure, but to spread the blessings of liberty.
Paid bills, stay out of jail.